And we have, everyone's on the phone. Is everybody still there?
Yeah.
All right, thank you all for your patience. We're getting ready to do a roll call, so we'll get started here momentarily.
Steve Williams?
Here.
Howard Anderson?
Here.
James Turner?
Thomas here.
Bell?
Here.
Bob Bailey? Nancy Cartmill?
Present.
Jim Morgan? Beth Thompson? Jason Stevens?
Here.
Deanna Holliday?
Here.
Patrick Lighting?
Here.
Bill Dingus? Terry Porter? Ralph Klein?
Here.
Katrina Keith?
Present.
Kenneth Adkins?
Here.
Robert Paisley?
Morning.
Don Bias? Shane Dillon?
Here.
Paul Davis? Stephen Toller? Nikki Smith? Alex Vanderpool? Stephen Gilmore? Randy Wheeler?
Here.
Robert Carpenter? William Hopkins? Phil Biggs?
Here.
Ron Phil?
Here.
Andy Skidmore? Tom Smith? Greg Bailey? Robert Pennington? Perry Keller?
Here.
Elwood Penn? Rob Watson? Vaughn Wilson? Max Francis? Scott Thompson? Greg Thomas? Bart Bryant? John Moore? Darren Eldridge? Steve Ross? Thomas Witt?
Here.
Matt Mann? Jerry Brenza?
A quorum has been established, so we will continue our meeting. Item number three on the agenda, the motion to approve minutes from previous meetings of April 28, 2017, June 27, 2017, and July 18, 2017, as distributed. You've had the chance to look over those that were sent out last week or earlier this week. And if there be no additions or corrections, I would entertain a motion to adopt those minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
Been properly moved and seconded. Any discussion on the minutes? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. They are approved. Number four, the Executive Director's Report, Mr. Chris Child.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I will just mention briefly, just to remind everyone, the reason that we're approving minutes from three different meetings is because two of those were special meetings. One on in June and July were special meetings, so we couldn't approve minutes at those meetings. That's why there's three. So the first thing I'm going to start off with for my report is just I think I've spoken with some of you all about this, but I wanted to at least be sure to bring it to the attention of the committee that doesn't necessarily affect Cuyahoga directly, but it affects our sister agency, Region 2. So as a brief recap, Cuyahoga's sister agency is Region 2 Planning and Development Council. That's a West Virginia designation. So most of the staff that you all deal with are just on Cuyahoga. So Salim and Jody and Bethany and Terry, those are all just Cuyahoga staff. But I'm the director of both agencies, and we endure and Danielle help with both agencies and Annette. So and it's all housed in this office. So when you guys run around and see staff you don't recognize, they're probably on the Region 2 West Virginia side. The West Virginia Regional Councils and the West Virginia Development Office is wanting to actually merge some of the regional councils from across the state. That would be in this area in both the Northern Panhandle, Eastern Panhandle, and in the Morgantown area. So the proposal from the West Virginia Development Office would be to actually merge Region 2, which is us here, with Region 3, which is our friends from RIC, in the Charleston area. So there has not been a lot of information forthcoming on exactly the scale, scope, how that would work, how that would look, or any other possible question you can have. There's been no real plan put together as yet for me to try to share that with you all. So that's potentially coming down the pipe. How that would impact Cuyahoga was one of the first questions that I had when talking with the development office and making sure they understood that regional councils also have the whole MPO, the transportation side, and it's a, you know, it's a major part of what we do, and make sure that they understood that from the development office standpoint. Just because they don't necessarily see that side of things, it's still integral to what we do, and especially Cuyahoga, obviously we're unique in the entire state because we serve three states. And for our friends in Ohio and Kentucky, I made sure that Charleston knew that Huntington was as far east as Kentucky and Ohio were looking to go. So I understand. I'm sympathetic to that. And I've already shared that with the state, and I will continue to do so. And we're having some staff from the development office will be coming down here to our office next month in November just to meet with us. In a little over a month. So by our next meeting, and maybe even before, I should have some more information to share with you all. But as the information comes up, I'll be sure to let you all know. I wanted to at least throw it out there on your radar that this is happening on the West Virginia side that may ultimately in some way impact Cuyahoga, but we're still not, we don't have any details to know exactly how that would look or how that would work. Any other possible question you may have is questions we've already asked or waiting to get some feedback and some answers back from the state. Anyone have any questions about that that I will not have an answer to, but I will make a note of it? Okay. Yes.
Well, the obvious thing is why do you have the largest metropolitan areas in the state divided into one for so many persons? I mean, that just seems like a logical.
That's a great question, Mr. Anderson. I don't have an answer for you.
I don't need to tell you if I teach the fire, but I think that's probably going to come up. It just doesn't seem logical.
And that was one of the first questions that we had asked, and we're looking for some input as far as the justification for why they need to be combined at all, and then how the decision to which ones to combine and how, and some are being combined and some are not, so how that decision was made.
I'll leave it here, too.
Well, I appreciate that. We're having, you'll be here for the Region 2 for me on Wednesday. And from the rest of the state standpoint, in Northern Panhandle, Eastern Panhandle, I would look at that from outside of this area and say, well, wait a minute, why are they combining the two biggest metropolitan areas, and are we going to get left out the rest of the state? So, you know, it's, depending on your viewpoint, you have a different view of that, but we look at it one way, and the rest of the state may look at it a different way, and hopefully some of those answers will be forthcoming. I can tell you in other states that have tried to combine regional councils, which I have on my desk, they have all put together, you know, a 50-page study or a report, you know, about yay fit, laying out the reasons doing it, the reasons how you're going to put which counties and which regions, how that's going to work with the transportation side and all that information. So that is, should be forthcoming at some point, assuming that it does move forward. I already started off the meeting with a note like that, but I wanted to at least make sure to bring you, keep you all up to speed and to make sure we all had all the information that I have today, which is not very much, unfortunately. Okay, next item. On a positive note, we're going back to Columbus to the track to ask for money to complete the right-of-way acquisition and the remaining design portion for the Chesapeake Bypass. So that's our major project in Lawrence County that we've been trying to get funded for X number of years. And we're going back up there again. That'll be on October the 12th, so next Thursday, or we'll be up there, Celine and myself, and I believe Patrick and Ralph will be up there in Columbus asking track for the money to complete right-of-way acquisition and to complete the design work on that. So a couple conferences we've had, I'll just mention briefly just to kind of let you all know that, you know, some of what we're doing here, but we did have the West Virginia DOH Planning Conference, which was last week up at Ogilvy. We were up there with Perry and Rob Watson and all the rest of our friends from West Virginia DOH and our other NPOs across the state. So that was a really nice conference. We had some presentations. We had Jody was real active in that. I think he drew the short straw to help plan that some days. But he was did a lot of good work for that. And so we appreciate all your efforts. And Celine and Terry gave a presentation on freight as well. So we were active in that and engaged in that. We think it turned out to be a really nice conference. So thanks to Perry and everyone at DOH for that. And the West Virginia Bike Summit, that was in Morgantown this past weekend. Jody again drew the short straw, I think, so he was up there for that. And then he's on a panel with Chandra and just to talk about the non-motorized studies here for the area and some of the work that we're doing. So I will mention if any one of you all in the community have an interest in doing some sort of bicycle plan or study or project, anything like that, Jody made some really good contacts from across the state and really across the nation up there at that bike summit. And as an amateur bicyclist myself, certainly I would enjoy anything like that. So we want to not just look at automobile and freight traffic. We like the bicycle and pedestrian projects as well. And Cuyahoga's umbrella memorandum of understanding for the TMA. So this is a quick reminder. After 2010 census, Cuyahoga became a new designation with the population had grown. So now we have this new designation as the TMA, which is why we have all the funding and grants available that we can do for some of these projects. And the one thing that came out of the certification review was just to have a big umbrella MOU involving Cuyahoga and all the agencies that we have individual MOUs or MOAs with, but also our friends in Charleston at RIC and all the agencies that they have MOUs and MOAs with. So rather than having, I think it's 20 individual MOUs, we needed to put together one umbrella MOU that just lists all 20 of those individuals. Seems basic. It's been a struggle to try to get some of the details down, but we're continuing to work on that. We had a meeting last Tuesday on that. That's May. Is that when we need to have that completed, Chandra? So by May of next year, we'll have that complete. That's some of the behind-the-scenes work that wouldn't necessarily affect you all on a day-to-day basis, which makes our lives and Terry's life, especially, has been ending up from our office, very interesting. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'll turn it back over to you. Does anyone have any other questions for me before I do that? I'll sit down. Back to you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you all very much for your time.
We have with us today representatives from the West Virginia Department of Highways, and they're going to present the Roads to Prosperity Highway Program, which is related to the West Virginia bond levy, bond issue that's coming up for October the 7th. Mr. Scott Effing, Scott, are you going to do the presentation?
Oh. They gave me the...
You got the straw, short straw.
Yeah, I drew the short straw.
You got the clicker.
All right. Well, thanks so much for giving us some time on the agenda. What we were able to do is make sure that folks that wanted some more information on the upcoming bond levy, the general obligation bonds, that folks wanted somebody to show up and tell you a little bit more about it. It's been very near and dear to our secretary's heart that we go out and make sure that anybody that wants to hear more about the proposal, that we go out and meet with them. So my job here today is not to convince you one way or another which way to vote on the levy. That's between you and however you want to mark the ballot on October 7th or before early voting stops, I think, Wednesday. Rather, my goal today is to make sure that you all understand everything that's in the levy, the proposed referendum that's up. And if you have any questions, you can ask me, and I'll try to answer them as best I can. One of the things we mentioned about the planning conference, and several of you all that have seen this presentation quite a few times, but when we had the planning conference last week up in Ogilvy, up in Wheeling, it just so happens that at the same time there was going to be one of these town hall meetings scheduled in Wheeling, and lo and behold, we were able to move them down to the big room, and we got the governor was able to come and speak to us all as a whole. And one of the things he asked the group right up front, are there any questions that anybody has about anything? And he answered as only he can many of the questions that came up either on the bonds or any questions that anyone had. But one of the things that I want to say about this is that the governor has made transportation a cornerstone of his administration. That this is part of his recovery. It's not only part of it, it is the keystone to the recovery. And during the legislative session and during the state of the state visits that he had around the state, as well as many of the open houses and forums, town hall meetings, legislation that came out recently from the last session. There's actually five pieces of legislation. Private public partnership, that was set to expire. Instead, we got that extended. And as well as we actually got the cap on a project lowered from $20 million to $10 million. So now projects $10 million and above can be used for the private public partnership. Design build, we got that changed. Used to be $50 million was the project limit. Add that up now. We can do up to $400 million a year, and $100 million can be carried over from year to year. Guarding, that's a guarding bonding. This is where we bond, similar to what we're asking to do with general revenue bonds. The only difference is we pledge future federal dollars to those projects. And we have a cap up to $500,000 to spend with guarding bonds. We've already obligated some of those monies, but some of those are about, we're about to sell the bonds for those. We already advertised some of those projects, and so far the projects have come in under budget. The last two pieces of legislation, parkways and the fees, those are the only two that actually added any money or potentially could add any money to the bucket as far as revenue. Parkways was given the opportunity to take a look at the revenue streams if they would like to. They can go through a process, increase their tolls. The other thing that they can do is look at one of the things that the study talked about in legislation, doing a study where you can buy a one-time pass to ride on the take the turnpike. Annually, you buy the pass, it's good for the year. So if you pay $10 per pass, whatever that dollar amount was, you can go up and down the turnpike as many times as you want. That would be eligible for anybody in the state as well as anybody out of state. Anybody that uses the turnpike doesn't take too many trips for approximately $10 a fee. Before they cover that. The other fees for the gas tax that went up a bit on the wholesale and some of the gas tanks, the DMV fees, they went from $30 to $50 for registration on your car. And the vehicle sales tax is really a use tax. It went from 5% to 6%. And if you look at these fees again, the fees there on the last are going to raise about $130 million. And that $130 million is what is earmarked now to pay off the general obligation bond. So no new money would come out of our coffers. If you look for $1.2 billion, that's approximately our current budget. We're now at $1.3 million. Just added $130 million. We're going to take that extra money that we just got from the previous legislation, and that's the money that we'll be paying off the bonds at $1.6 billion. So 800 first year, 400 the second, 200 then 200 the last 2 years. Tolls again, we're looking to increase about $40 million bond to $500 million. Only 10 counties are eligible for those projects. I can show you a map. I'll show you a map that shows those counties, but that's the only place that those tolls and then the guarding, again, the bonding went from $200 million to $500 million as far as the total. Process, we go through our six-year STIP. Your TIP is part of the STIP. We have National Bridge Program, pavement management. We've actually contacted all the MPOs. We looked through all the transportation plans, many other documents, along with a system of identifying these projects. And one of the things we wanted to do, and map in the back shows all the projects that come out in these different ways. As you can see, every state not only has one or two or three or four, but several projects. Some of the counties have a multitude of projects in them. It could be anything from small bridge replacement, split slides, up to investments and improvements. Some of the things that you might know about the West Virginia's roadway system. We have about 36,000 miles. That puts us as the largest roadway network in the country. We, along with four other privately for the roadway. That's everything again from dirt and gravel roads up to our 6 lane highway. But we're only the 44th fund state as far as funding. We're a minimum apportionment state. We're a deficit state. We give to the federal government a certain amount of money, and they give us back more money than we put in from the gas, from the gas. Again, when we look at this, we look at secondary roads, expressways, all those different kinds of cover ADA, safety drinks, food supplies, all these. There's, again, the map, same map that's there and shows the variety of projects that are out there. We talk about ways, how these projects come out in different ways. We have different funding sources, different revenues. I'm talking about those buckets and how they would come out and how we would advertise these projects to get them out on the streets. One of the things, if you look at the ways, first thing that we did, we got $130 million, even as that trickles in at about $10 million a year, $2 million a month. Have a good year, year and a half before we would sell those bonds. So even before we've sold the bonds or done anything, we knew that folks would want to see with the increase in taxes that we get something out as soon as possible. So $30 million surge boost for resurfacing those projects are out. They're being done right now or completed already. That's as of July 1st. The second $100 million of fees, those are going out also as we speak as the secondary wave coming out. Even before we get the revenues, we're taking out of our current program in advance of this project. So secondary state local service roads, Scott will tell you, those are the most difficult ones for a district to deal with. Those are that last mile of a roadway, that last bit of dirt road or gravel road or even paved surface that only services very few people. That's one of the most difficult ones to get to because we have all this other need, 36,000 miles that we have to take care of. So we have purposely set aside these monies to go and try to get to that last mile wherever possible, try to do some kind of improvement or maintenance on those. We have the Garvey bonds, and again, that's reconstruction, bridges, and roadway. We had a bid in for, I said, 14 miles, was it? An incredible project that went out, came in under budget. In the last 10 years, we've done 7 miles of actual roadway construction. We're doing 30 now, I think, was part of this on the interstate. Complete construction. And again, if you look, there's a second wave of gardens yet to be identified or fully identified out on the street. $125 million will be the first wave. Turnpike wants to go out. Then at the October referendum pass, we look at those projects too and get them stacked up to go out in the street. So this is just the first part of many, many more waves to come. This will be the first part of coming out. And again, if you look, these are throughout all 55 counties and well over 500 projects in total. The Turnpike bond sale that I told you, some of the first installments of at least 2 installments would be King Cole Highway, Route 10 operational improvements, and bridge replacements in the 10 counties. 10 counties are listed down here in the dark gray area. Either Turnpike runs through the county or it's a county adjacent to a county where the Turnpike runs. If you look at our general bond, here are some of the projects that have already been teed up and looked at for the general obligation. U.S. 340, that's the Eastern Panhandle. Route 2 widening, there's actually 3 different projects from Route 2 widening. Both expressway paving, Interstate 70 bridges, and that's an important project that I'll get back to here in a minute. Interstate 77 Turnpike widening, that's the affected area. Interstate 79, that's the western exit, where you've got that pretty bad weave on the southern southbound I-79. Interstate 64 Nitro, same all is wide and take from that that bottleneck that from where it goes to a 6 lane to a 4 lane facility back to 6 lane, adding a bridge across the Long River and complaining was doing this section, US 35, pavement, and making not really an intersection, it's actually an interchange there. It tells you highway, Pritchard to I-64. That would be set to go with sale one. Again, no new taxes. Taxes are already in place. $130 million are the taxes that the thing goes off. And just to kind of give you an idea of what the general obligation bond means, this is the same diagram here. The green is the general obligation bond. The first part here, these parkway bonds and the Garvey bonds, this was those first two waves, the $30 million that went out as a surge, and that corresponding $100 million that came out. If you just made this part here the part of the plan for what the governor's trying to get out, it doesn't, it pales in comparison to the whole project and the magnitude of the whole project that they're trying to get it out. It really kind of shows you what the general obligation on compared to the other pieces of the puzzle that make up the governor's plan. So what happens if it doesn't pass? Well, if it doesn't pass, we have a problem. We have to wait for when these projects hit the ground. Wait for the project to the ground. We can have issues with maintenance, ongoing maintenance, and deterioration of those projects that are on the ground now waiting for these improvements. You also have the cost of money. And this shows, this is from the Federal Highway Administration, shows you the cost index is continually going up. Over the last 65 years, or 13 years, a 65% increase in cost. So costs keep going up, and you can see it actually went up more. They kind of went down in 2008, and then it's crept back up. But over that, the whole trend is 65%. We also, remember I talked about that I-70 project, those bridges. That's a project that has to go. Those bridges are in really pretty bad shape. They need serious attention, up to $170 million. If the general obligation bond does not pass, we are going to still have to do that project. That project is listed in the general obligation. So what ends up happening is it goes from here to the Garvey bonds or this extra $130 million out of a regular program, whatever it is we have to. We're going to be shifting and shuffling back quite a bit. So anything that you see, some of these projects have to go that we have slated for the general obligation bond. And other projects that we might have in these different lists are going to be changed because of projects that we have to do instead. Route 10 was listed as the most dangerous route in West Virginia back in Reader's Digest article. Twice as likely on a two-lane road in a fatal crash would be a four-lane road. So again, just waiting on upgrades. We can go from two-lane facilities to four-lane facilities. We're looking at potential cost of human life as well as catastrophic crashes. An example of some of these are in the past. The U.S. 35 actually, the crash rate, really not that bad. The problem is if there's a crash, it's really, really bad. High speed, head-on collision, or folks running right off the two-lane road. We also have to worry about our aging infrastructure. I'm sure this is probably Pennsylvania or something. It's not in West Virginia. Certainly not in Scott District. But this is the kind of thing that we have to worry about. That if we can't pay the attention to our infrastructure that we need to, and we have to come back later and go into a cleaner paint and keeping things up in pristine order, we have to go back to major rehab and replace. So again, one of the things that DOH has sent out here, make sure that folks understand what the referendum is all about. If they have any questions, we need to make sure that we do integrity, show that our partnership, even with the Federal Highway Administration, plays an important part in funding the departments as well as the NPOs and making sure that the projects go through the proper planning process and making sure that we have proper communication. A lot of these projects are still pretty much in the early phases, still have to go through quite a bit of public involvement. If you have a question about where what projects are listed on the general obligation bond, just go to our website right here, transportation.wd.gov, click on that red button right there, and it'll list by county as well as by different types of funds. So again, I want to thank you on behalf of West Virginia Division of Highways and the governor. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer.
Terry, I'll just mention that in everyone's packets, they've got this right here, which is a map of the statewide, and then a big long Excel sheet with the Cabell project, Cabell County projects on one side, and then Wayne County projects on the other side.
Terry, I think you're going to get us to sit down because we're going to talk about the procedure for fiscal year 2018 through 2021 TIP program, groupable projects,
perfect.
How that goes.
The groupable projects is something that we've talked about as far as West Virginia MOH, very closely with the West Virginia Association of MPOs. We went through a process. This is something that's been available to be done for many, 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 many years. We just, previous administrations have chosen not to do it. Kentucky does it, Maryland does it, Virginia does it, all our surrounding states, Pennsylvania does it. But what it does is rather than you had two emergency meetings recently, those emergency meetings were projects, likely, I'd have to go back and look, but there's probably projects that would fall into this category. And there are projects like small bridge replacement, resurfacing, repaving, and I think a lot of came from that original $30 million surge was up there. It doesn't require action of this board. It's the main thing. We will still report on all those projects. We'll go into as much detail as we've always gone, telling you what the project is, what the expectation of the project, when it's, how much it costs, where it is, all that kind of thing that we've always been able to supply Tioga. The one thing that won't happen, though, is that the board does not need to take action. It's part of a groupable set that all we do is once a project comes through the process, we'll let Jody know or Terry know. They'll put it in the TIP, and then we'll report on it at the next meeting, as if you all took action. But what you'll find is sometimes you'll go out and we've already done that resurfacing project. We've already fixed that slip. We've already started that transportation alternative project. Already gotten a head start on it. And what it does is it kind of streamlines things. It also makes sure that though this group still will take action on those larger projects, those projects that would require air quality analysis or that are major projects in the area. So those projects that really are worth more of the time of this board and consideration still come before the board. It's those projects that really everybody's still interested in, but everyone's always will be surfacing. So that's what we're asking you all to do. And another benefit of that, Mr. Chairman, is that and I'm proud to announce that right now the Transportation Alternative Grants for the Division of Highways, they're open as we speak now. We made the announcement yesterday. So we encourage now, rather than having to go through a bureaucratic paperwork to get these on the TIP and get them moving, that we can get Tioga and other MPOs engaged more in the front end in helping those communities go through that grant process, help plan those projects, and make sure that you can help the communities more than do paperwork on the back.
Questions? I think we'll address it again. Okay, thank you very much. Number seven, after Executive Director Chris Childs to present the COVID fiscal year 2017 performance and expenditure completion report. And that is a part of a thicker document in your group of documents.
Sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I'm sure everyone did some bedtime reading last night, making sure they were read every word on here, we certainly appreciate that. So this being the first meeting after the end of the fiscal year, so we have two things. At the beginning of the fiscal year, you all passed what is called the work program or unified planning work program, which you did back at the beginning of the fiscal year. This is basically our document that lays out exactly what we're going to do for the entire fiscal year. Now that fiscal year is over, we have this document which says this is what we just did for the past entire fiscal year. So if you were to compare the work program and this document, you would just notice that everything this document says we're going to do, this document just lays out exactly what it is that we did. So just all we need at this point, we're happy to entertain any questions. I know we're running a little bit behind schedule. I don't want to keep you all here all day on a beautiful Friday, but if anybody has any questions, we're happy to answer it. But this document here is just summarizing the activities that we did for fiscal year 17.
And you will find in your packet resolution number 2018-005 that approves, as just been explained. I'll entertain a motion to adopt the resolution.
Right, your version.
Is there a second?
Second.
And properly moved and second. Any further discussion on the resolution? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Oh. Thank you. Number eight, presentation of Ohio Department of Transportation Functional Roadway Classification and National Highway System Resolution. Child.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And one other thing I should mention, if you all haven't noticed, the resolutions that are highlighted in the agenda, we tried to color code them with the color of the resolutions. So just to try to make things go a little bit more clear, I know when you get a big packet, it's hard to sometimes follow. So the color on your agenda does mean something. It should be color coded with what the actual agenda is or what the resolution is in the packet. So this resolution here is just basically saying that ODOT, the Ohio Department of Transportation in Cuyahoga, has reviewed the current highway classification system for arterial selectors, local roads, et cetera. I know we've submitted those. Federal Highway has also approved, and ODOT has approved any changes on the revisions of classification of the National Highway System and the Highway Functional Classification System. So this resolution is just asking the board to approve those submissions, those changes.
And in your packet is the yellow, goldenrod, whatever they have the fancy name for now, is yellow to me, but that's 2018-006. Is there a motion to adopt the resolution?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Properly moved and second. Any further discussion on the resolution? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 It is approved. Thank you very much. Number nine, presentation of Ohio River Crossing Study. Mr. Childs will handle that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's not a resolution for this, but we'll just hopefully ask for a motion here at the end, but I wanted to explain this to you all because this one actually is a little different than what we typically do. So whenever we do our work program at the beginning of the fiscal year, we have several projects that Cuyahoga takes the lead on administering. So for this fiscal year in Ohio, we've got the US 52 interchange justification, we've got the Exit 8 multimodal use study, we've got the non-motorized studies, for Milton and for Barbersville. So normally we just pass all those as part of our work program. For next fiscal year, we'll be adding a study to that for a study at a bridge, Ohio River Crossing Bridge that would connect in Barbersville, if you all know where the Merritts Creek Connector is, right there like by Target and Home Depot in Barbersville. The idea of putting a bridge across the Ohio River into Ohio that would then connect in with the eventual completion of the Chesapeake Bypass. So I mentioned earlier that on Thursday, October the 12th, we'll be going to Columbus to ask Ohio Track Group for funding to complete the right-of-way acquisition for the Chesapeake Bypass. When we were up there last year, one of the questions that they had asked was, What about the idea, because that's an idea that's been kicked around, putting a bridge across the Ohio River as soon as we come up with the, you know, $150 million to do so. But, you know, what about that bridge that would go across? Because, so then that was one of the main questions they asked from the West Virginia side, how are things moving with the bridge? So in anticipation of us going up there on October the 12th, we just wanted, we thought it would be beneficial and prudent to go and have something to present to them this year. So rather than waiting until next fiscal year to ask for inclusion of this bridge study in the work program, if we could go ahead and do a motion here at this meeting, we can then tell the track here in Ohio on Thursday the 12th that the, you know, Kiva board is approved, made a motion to approve. We'll be including a study for next fiscal year, FY19, looking at basically a justification study of that bridge. It would be great. It would be a preliminary study on the one that hasn't been completed yet. And we would be using Kiova's sub-allocated funds to do that. Just we've done that for, we're doing that for the interchange justification study and the non-motorized study, the Lawrence County non-motorized study that's going on right now also. So that's why it's a little bit out of order of what we would normally do, but we wanted to do that in anticipation that the Ohio track folks will ask us about that bridge and we can have something to present to them. Any questions about that?
The chair would entertain a motion to proceed with the bridge study in fiscal year 2019, put it in a unified spending work program as outlined by our director.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
And properly moved and second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. No. Thank you very much. Number 10, under regional projects, updates, and discussion, Huntington Street flooding mitigation plan. Mr. Parsons, are you still with us?
I am, sir.
Okay, you're on. Proceed.
Okay, thank you. I believe everyone has a handout, and is it on the screen as well?
Yes, it is.
Okay. In the interest of time, I understand things are moving a little slowly, so I can move through this rather quickly, and you all have the handouts for reference if you have any other questions. I'm sure Salim or Chris could either answer it or refer you to me for more information. We have just completed the street flooding mitigation plan, which has been underway in the city of Huntington for roughly 18 months. The screen you see there is kind of representative of some of the issues that we talked about and studied through this process. What happens in these five CSX underpasses? When there are some of these regular nuisance flooding events that happen for either a couple hours up to a day when we have big rain events in Huntington. So we looked at a number of locations and studied a multitude of things as part of this process. If you go to page 3, the project purpose, there's 4 numbered items. The first was to look at mobility issues. What happens to the transportation system when flooding happens? The second was, what happens to the stormwater system? Where does the water go, and what are the impacts on the overall city system when we do have excess rainfall? Number 3 was to identify some mitigation measures that the city and the region could look at in the future to decrease the likelihood of future events and kind of reduce the impacts on the system. And then finally, study the flow of all the traffic, both motorized and non-motorized, through the identified problem areas. One of the major components of this study was the Marshall campus and the multitude of travel modes that people use to get to class and to work and all of the related commuting patterns that come about in that area. If you go on to slide 7, the project approach, we basically looked at it from 4 different perspectives. First of all, circulation. What are the transportation issues? We collected information on all the pedestrian and bicycle facilities that connect the main routes. We also collected information on the sidewalk system, the ADA accessibility issues that might be present, especially around these flooding areas, the underpasses and the low areas on 3rd Avenue and 5th Avenue. We developed a model using the that looked at the stormwater and green infrastructure system. So we're able to develop some assumptions and recommendations for how to improve the overall system over time. We then developed a set of tools to help local government and other agencies to implement plans that might come about as part of this, as a result of this process. And then finally, we had a great stakeholder committee that was made up of local leaders and individuals that had close connections to some of these issues that were able to help us coordinate how to navigate this process through from project inception and data collection all the way through to completion and coming up with implementation options. We got the next slide is technical components. We looked at two different types of models, number one and two. Kiova has a Transcad, which is a travel model that's useful for predicting future traffic levels and impacts to the transportation network based on a certain set of assumptions. So we utilize that to look at the traffic issues. We also developed a stormwater model to kind of take into account what happens during these major storm events. So we modeled a number of different levels of water, a one-year storm, a three-year storm, a five-year storm, to see what the impacts were at each location in the system and help us to develop solutions to those problems. Number three, we came up with alternatives. We identified future projects, and these related to things like water storage, green infrastructure improvements. We looked at some road diets in areas especially along 3rd Avenue and 5th Avenue, where some of the travel lanes might not have been needed in the condition they are now in the future. And we were able to look at ways where we could get some of that excess stormwater back into the ground. We developed a benefit cost analysis to see what the impacts were from these improvements to the economies, and then developed a set of recommendations based on all of this study that we were finally able to prioritize and develop into phasing groups for use by political leaders and other decision makers. We go to project approach circulation, which should be two slides ahead. This is a diagram of some of the data collection that we did. You can see all the green areas are the sidewalks that were inventoried. There are some empty spaces where sidewalks are not present, so that helps to identify possible locations for future expenditures. We also noted all of the ADA crosswalks, which are the yellow circles, or the ADA location, ADA ramps. The ADA crosswalks are the yellow lines connecting those. And the purple areas are any alleyways that could possibly be utilized for some green infrastructure improvements and other types of stormwater improvements for these areas in particular. The next slide, stormwater model development. I'll just quickly go through these. If you go to the page that says H&H model development analysis and observations, we looked at basically two major systems. The first was the minor system, which was everything that's basically underground, and the major system would be the street level system for each. Both of these systems impacted overall flooding, and this is what we looked at to hopefully reduce in the future. The flooding itself, just quickly, it was caused by a combination of these two systems. So from underneath, whether it was from just poor capacity water lines, or a combination of silt and other residue that was built up in these lines, water that was in excess, especially during these rain events, came up from underneath. There was upwelling from underneath, and that combined with all of the water collected on the impervious surfaces, whether that's asphalt or sidewalks or parking lots, the combination of those two sources of water combined to back the system up so that water ponded on the surface. especially in those low-lying underpasses under the CSX tracks. If you go to the next section, green infrastructure, we looked at a number of different types of improvements, and there's five or six pages here that the city is, or the MPO or other agencies could take a look at in the future for encouraging additional groundwater recharge. We looked at things like green alleyways, where you would use permeable pavement and some type of liner to allow for excess water to charge back into the groundwater system through these alleyways that may not have a whole lot of traffic or use today. We also looked at things like bioretention, whether that was in a median strip or a rain garden, if there's open space in a neighborhood, or things like islands or bump outs that actually extend into the travelways. We also looked at permeable pavement, which was something that is already in place in a couple locations. The good example that the sanitary board likes to use is the Cookout on Fifth Avenue. Part of their parking lot is permeable pavement, so the next time you're over in that area, you can take a look. It's basically designed so that water can get back into the ground right through the paving and reduce some of that ponding that causes standing water in those areas. The next section, the travel patterns and closure impacts. We looked at, as I stated, five locations along the CSX tracks at 1st, 8th, 10th, 16th, and 20th Street. And then we also looked at locations on 3rd Avenue and 5th Avenue, basically between about 18th Street and 25th Street to see where these major flooding issues were. So what we did was set up a model to look at simulations of each of these closures and how each one impacts the system, both by themselves and in combination. So we had, I believe, 13 different scenarios where either one location was simulated to be closed by a storm event, up to all of them. And then we were able to model what the impacts were to the overall travel network. Some of the maps, if you look, the performance results, they're basically blue roadways. You can see the impacts of closures on different locations. The one I have on the screen here is scenario 13. It's slide number 30, if we're having trouble keeping up. And it basically looks at what happens if you close everything, close all five underpasses, close 3rd Avenue, and close 5th Avenue. Where does the traffic go, and where do the major traffic loads locate? And as you can see, the major impacts are on 1st Street. A lot of traffic comes over there, and there's also a lot of rerouting over to the Ohio side, back across the bridge into downtown from that direction. Flooding impacts, we looked at, again, a number of different alternatives through the stormwater model and had tried to get an indication of where the major improvements could be made if funds were available. So this next section looks at different types of improvements that could be made. On slide 39, conveyance was one option. The next slide, we looked at a combined sewer separation alternative. The tables there show you the existing capacities versus what would happen with it if this alternative was built. We ended up coming up with a solution that was a combination, and it's slide 45. It's an optimized alternative number one, is how it's labeled. And it basically looks at a combination of different improvements, including green infrastructure, some revisions to the stormwater system itself, and then some storage options as well. And it showed major improvements in flooding in the underpasses. It reduced the number of long-term events over time where this flooding could happen during a storm. And it also drastically improved the water quality in the city due to the incorporation of some of the green infrastructure improvements. So we looked at comparisons through the benefit cost analysis and came up with cost estimates for each of these things. The next section, starting on slide 48, is we came up with complete streets options. And just a quick illustration of these, the one we have in this slide set is a section of Fifth Avenue between 29th Street and 13th Street. So basically just east of the CBD, across Hal Greer and out through the campus to the east. And we came up with different cross sections where green infrastructure could be incorporated. The next slide shows two typical sections. The first in the stadium area from 25th Street through to Hal Greer Boulevard. And it incorporates a road diet, which decreases the number of travel lanes. It adds a two-way cycle track on the main Marshall campus side of Fifth Avenue. And then it also has about 34 feet of bioretention width within the existing right-of-way, so that excess groundwater can be recharged into the system without having to impact adjacent property owners or other land interest in that area. Utilities were not impacted through these layouts, so hopefully that would help reduce costs if any of these are taken forward to the next steps. So there are, I believe, through this plan, we have probably about 20 different cross sections that we've recommended throughout the city network. The next section is cost estimates, and real quickly, just flipping through these, the plan has a series of detailed tables where we came up with a planning level cost estimate for each alternative, and it identified hardscapes, vegetative areas, and permeable surfaces, and came up with a unit cost as well as expected widths and distances for each, so that we could come up with a general cost estimate for each alternative in each section that can be utilized if funding is sought for that. We developed a prioritization matrix where each of the alternatives was ranked based on impacts to the overall system, whether those are environmental, engineering, constructability, or and how they impact mobility overall. So there was a ranking done, and then we could also develop, based on that ranking, a phasing plan that could be utilized for budgetary purposes as future transportation dollars are sought and the work program is developed for future years. Finally, we came up with a funding toolkit in the plan that looks at optional available funding resources from anywhere from the DOH and the Federal Highway Administration to the West Virginia Brownfields Assistance Center, the Appalachian Regional Council, private foundations, and other groups that are more local and regional in scale, so that those resources are there for the MPO if you decide to use those in the future. That was a real quick run through. I understand the time constraints. If anyone has any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer, but please feel free to contact me privately if you'd like to talk about this in more detail as well.
I'm sure we'll have some discussions in the future, but we appreciate your time.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Next up, Tri-State Transit Expansion Study, Gretchen Johnson. Are you still with us, Gretchen?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you want to proceed?
Sure, thank you. So I don't have slides. I just wanted to kind of talk for a few minutes about the project. The project started off earlier this year, and we did a full weekday ride check. So we gathered data from every route along or on each trip. And I know it's a flag stop system, but we had had some time points, and so we created sort of a set of stops, and so gathered the ridership at each stop and each trip for all the routes. So in addition to that, we conducted a market analysis to help us understand the demand based on population and employment densities, as well as socioeconomic factors within Huntington and the surrounding area. And so that was early on work, and then we just finished recently a review, kind of a detailed review of each route. And I believe Terry and Jody printed out one of the example route profiles that we put together. So we put together one of these profiles for every single route, going in detail on the ridership. Well, first of all, like a description of the route and its alignment, any sort of any trips that are different from the primary alignment. And then we go into detail in looking at the ridership per trip and the ridership by each stop. And then kind of review some performance indicators, compare it to the whole system. And then at the very last portion of the route profile is a overview of the route, any sort of options that we can think of to help improve the route, so any sort of recommendations. And this is really, you know, the recommendations can be contradictory, they can be dependent on something else happening. It's really just sort of a brainstorm of anything that we think might help improve the ridership or improve the productivity of the route. And so all of these route profiles together help us kind of move into the next phase, where it's really looking at the system as a whole and trying to come up with some recommendations. And so that's where we're at right now. We are trying to put together one or two different scenarios to take out to the public, which will be out there November 8th and 9th in Huntington, presenting our options, the recommendations, to try to come gather feedback and, of course, talk with PTA and Kiowa and really come to sort of a conclusion for one final system redesign. And that's really the goal of the project. It's really kind of focused on just the design of the route. Of course, there are other aspects of the transit system that we may, have some thoughts on, but it's really our main goal is to provide a redesigned system along with, the schedule, the frequency, and the span of hours that each of the routes will operate. And hopefully gather support within the community for moving those changes forward. So that's, a very quick overview. I encourage everyone to look at the route profile. I think they're pretty interesting, and I can always send out more of them if anyone is interested. We can post them online, too, if that's something that's of interest. But if anyone has any questions right now, I'm happy to take them.
For my own use, what route is the one that goes to the Cerrito Canova area?
Route 1. Yep.
Any other questions? Okay, Gretchen, we thank you for your time and your patience.
All right. Well, thank you. Yep. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Next is the Lawrence County Non-Motorized Bicycle Pedestrian Plan Mobility Study. Matt Selhorst, are you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, proceed.
Okay, so you should have a presentation in front of you, and I think some handouts with the slides from the presentation. So just a reminder that the Lawrence County study really consists of four different tasks. First is the truck mobility study. Second are the bicycle and pedestrian plan studies for Lawrence County as well as the City of Ironton. Then there's the Park Avenue traffic study in the City of Ironton. And then there's sidewalk assessment for Ironton as well. So talk a little bit about what we've done. Since the last update, we do hold monthly progress meetings with our stakeholders, our steering committee members. It includes the Ironton and Lawrence County Community Action Organization, County Engineers Office, the Economic Development Corporation, Kiowa staff, and ODOT staff. We held a public involvement and stakeholder meetings back in July, and we received some really good comments. At those meetings, we presented our draft concepts and had developed some improvements and some cost estimates for those improvements that everyone could provide comments on and look and have some input. We've been incorporating those comments into our reports now and our recommendations, and we intend to have another stakeholder meeting in November to present the finals. So let's move forward to the truck flow study. As part of that study that where we were looking at the impacts of traffic coming over the New Ohio River Bridge and coming into Ironton and going on 93 up Park Avenue, as part of that, we saw that there was some conflict points, and we made some recommendations for some intersections at 2nd and Park, 4th and Park, 2nd Jefferson, and as well as 2nd Street. And we are wrapping up our report now. We'll have that to the staff next month after we've incorporated the comments from our drafts. Moving forward, some quick little shots. It shows the intersection there at Park and 2nd. You can see how trucks making that movement from Park Avenue, that right-hand movement from Park Avenue to 2nd, there's conflicts and it causes traffic to back up or have to move out of the way. It looks like what we could do is probably a pretty simple fix. We'd have to narrow the sidewalk along 2nd Avenue, restripe the lanes, move some of the crossbars back, but it would create a better turning movement for the trucks. So we've developed that conceptual improvement. We have a cost estimate for it, and then that would allow Kiowa and the city to move forward. Moving next to the second slide, you see a screenshot of what we're recommending from our traffic analysis. That's the intersection coming off of the bridge into Ironton at Jefferson and 2nd Street. Currently coming off the bridge, you're forced into either on the right-hand side is currently there's an existing, it's a through and a right turn lane, and then it has a left turn lane only. Not many vehicles are using that left turn lane only, so all the traffic is backing up into that far right turn lane, and it's backing up about 120 feet now at least. We're proposing to make that right-hand turn lane a right turn only, make that middle lane then a left and a through. But what that has to do is we have to change how then the traffic is accepted on 2nd Street. On 2nd Street coming southbound, there's currently a left turn lane, and we would eliminate that left turn lane, and then we'd have one lane that's where you can make all the movements on it. It wouldn't be restricted to left turn lane only. If you turn to the next slide where it says proposed revision to 2nd Street, that shows then coming off the bridge where the through traffic would go on the 2nd Street. We'd propose that the improvements be made on 2nd Street with some tree lawns, sidewalks, adding some parking back in, and defining then the driveways on the south side of 2nd Street there. So you see the two lanes now. Currently, it's three lanes that were put in with the new bridge crossing, but this allows traffic to continue to move better than through that intersection. I'll move forward then with the bicycle and pedestrian plan for the county in Ironton. We spent a lot of time looking at the county, and we're still looking at some of the stuff in the city of Ironton right now, but we did conduct a survey that email survey, online survey was sent out to quite a few folks. We got some good input to help us identify some of the gaps and some of the problems there. We provided some benchmarking where we looked at different facilities, whether it was just signing, striped bike lanes, multi-use paths, and what those would cost. We provided a draft recommendations. You see on the screen there some of the recommendations for all the areas. What our main objective there really was to link all the different generators. So whether it was a school, whether it was a county building, a city building, places where people gather, is trying to connect all those, and then also connect really the eastern part of the county with the western part of the county. So that's where our recommendations have come in. And if anybody wants to see those in more detail, just let myself know or Kiowa staff know, and we can get you some more information. We're wrapping all that up, and we'll have the master plan completed in October for all those facilities. Moving forward then to the Park Avenue traffic study in Ironton. We completed traffic counts. We completed all the different traffic engineering studies, speed and warning analysis, capacity analysis, and then developed some conceptual improvements. We were mainly looking at from 6th Street north up through the 52 interchange up to Ironton Hills area for the improvements. If you look at the next slide where it says Park Avenue traffic study and has a shot of all the traffic counts on there, it shows where traffic signals have been warranted. So traffic signals are warranted at 6th Street, 8th Street, 9th Street, and the ramp intersections. The crash rates are greater than the statewide average, so we use that to justify any of our grant applications that the community wants to pursue. And by putting traffic signals in, we can really significantly reduce the delay along Park Avenue. If you look at the next slide, it says Park Avenue concepts. That's part of the Park Avenue, so that's showing the 6th Street and 7th Street. You can see where what we're trying to do is really define some of the driveways. Right now, some of the driveways are just kind of open in some areas. So the proposal would be to go in there and clean up a lot of the turn lanes with new striping, putting crosswalks in, putting the new signals in, improving the sidewalks, and really making that corridor nice. We were proposing some nice new wayfinding signs as well, and some overhead signage there that would help those that aren't familiar with the area to move along. So we've got some concepts to go from 6th Street all the way up to Ironton Hills. One of the feedback that we got during public meetings and the stakeholder meetings was to look at possibly closing 9th Street and routing that traffic down to 8th Street. So we are looking at that as part of our final recommendations, and that will then also be coming here probably next month as well. The last part of it is the sidewalk inventory and assessment. So back in the wintertime, we did LIDAR mapping where we collected all the information on the curb ramps, detectable warnings, mainly for the Ironton CBD, and looking at what sidewalks and what curb ramps don't meet ADA compliance. We put that into a big CAD file, and actually that helped us identify some of the other areas for the Park Avenue study and for the bridge study. So it provided us that information. We are currently putting all that information into a big geodata file that we can map and then identify the deficiencies. So we're still in the process of doing that. And from there, then we prioritize what those segments are. So to give the city and Kiowa an idea of where the big problems are and what the cost is and how to develop then a ADA transition plan for the community. With that, I'll open it up to any questions or comments.
Anything for Matt? We have a quiet bunch today, Matt. Thank you very much for your time and the information.
Thanks.
Bassett Airport Project, we're looking today to have Mr. Brent Brown. He is the, I never get it right. You're the associate director, assistant director,
Deputy Director.
I got the director part right. Matt came to us last year, and he's really taken on Tri-State Airport, and we're lucky to have him. Matt, what's going on at the airport? Grant?
Just a quick update. Our elevator project that we have going on has been under state and federal review for the last number of months, which held us up quite a bit. We had expected to start construction back in July, but we were told that they'd finally completed those reviews, and we expect those any day now. So we'll get the process started, but we don't expect to start construction until spring. We We just had a conference call with all the rental car agencies to come up with a footprint of an acre and a half rental car return lot that will be part of the phasing for the new extended access road project that you all are part of the design on. So we're just getting input from them on their needs so that we can get the most accurate footprint to move forward with the design. And then on the air side of things, we just completed our $3.5 million apron rehabilitation project, which turned out really well. And then we last week we started our $10.5 million taxiway alpha relocation project. So that will be going through probably next summer. Any questions on the airport?
Brent, thank you very much. Seems like the elevator project is having something down, is that what you're saying?
And I'll just add, Mr. Chairman, Kai was especially excited about the elevator project because that's really the first project that our sub-allocated funds were used for. So once we can cut that ribbon, it'll be a momentous occasion for Kiowa since becoming a TMA.
Thank you again. Let's go down to Boyd and Greenup County County Project. Terry, are you going to address those or?
Thomas. Yes, in your packet you have a handout that was prepared by Joe Callahan and District 9 talking about the projects that are currently ongoing in Boyd and Greenup County. As you can see, most of those are moving right along. There are a couple that are still waiting for funding, but I'm not going to go through all of them. But you can read that if there's anything that you're interested in. And, like I say, Joe Callahan is kind of the expert on these projects, so if you have any questions, he'd be a good person to ask.
Thank you very much. Lawrence County Projects, Iron Riverfront Trail and others, is that Ralph? Are you going to speak to us?
Patrick.
Oh, Patrick?
Well, as far as the Arlington Trail, we're still pending the core permit. They are, I guess, updating or doing an environmental review on it now. So.
Anyone has any contacts at the Corps of Engineers?
I don't know how that would help you.
2 years and 10 months now.
On the rest of Lawrence County's projects, we have the sign upgrade project of the countywide project, that along with the curb sign upgrades, that project has been completed. We also have a paving project, the Lawrence County Road 5, County Road 9, or 29, that will be bidding in the springtime for construction in the springtime. Also, we have County Road 1, that is a landslide project. That will be going out to bid here shortly. County Road 4, we're in the final stages of design of that project. That's also a landslide project. We have another slide project, which is County Road 5, that's under construction right now. We have the Salt Road project that is roundabout there in South Point. That's a design build project. We're out for design or out for bids at the moment on that project. We got a pre-bid meeting on Wednesday, so that's about $1.5 million project for around about there on the interchange. That's all the road. We also have County Road 104 and 10A bridges. Those are two design-build projects, and they're out for scoping right now. So once we get that scope to get the funds secured, then we'll be going with those projects. We've already been awarded the funds. We're just waiting for the availability of them. We also have the TID is working right now to acquire a consultant for the US 52 and 243, and that's for a interchange operation study at that interchange. And if you've ever taken that interchange, you know if you get to the top of the ramp, you can't turn left, and it really causes problems for trucks. Commerce through ODOT to be able to get that project, at least get a study done right now. And then the County Road 410 project is around about there on Walmart Way. We're just waiting for availability of funds for that project.
Will that be the first round of the one in South Point? Is that the first round about?
I don't know of any in the local.
Anybody knows?
Tri-state area.
Okay.
Yeah. Athens is the closest.
It's the first one? Okay. We should have a big, big roundabout party.
Right in the middle.
What I envision is bleachers set up to watch this.
We should have somebody from Wayne County, Cabell County, Boyd County. We should just have a big party.
Pay to watch. Just pay. A lot of things going on. Thanks. Question to DOT statewide freight study plan is crucial and critical freight corridor designation update.
I don't know, Harry, if you or Scott had anything you wanted to add about that.
Plan's about to wrap up the formal part of the submission that will be going into Federal Highway Administration soon. Following that, we will actually submit our the final critical network. The freight network is made up basically of the interstate system that each MPO was allocated a certain amount of mileage based on a formula. We've got those, put those in, but the rural part, we're still formulating that to be part of our overall plan. To in order for you to apply for TIFA grant, you must be on the National Freight Network or that last critical mile network.
That includes all 64 now in Cabell, Wayne County?
Yes, all the interstate systems throughout the state of West Virginia.
And what about US 52 or Tulsa Highway?
US 52, that portion of it that is in, so that was the only part that we put in the National Freight Network. Then the MPOs were given designation mileage, and 52 in the urban area was part of that critical network. The rural part, which is outside the MSA, the Metropolitan Statistical Area, which isn't that much of 52, right? Probably less than a mile. Okay. Well, the rest of it going down to Pritchard has not been listed yet. It's part of this rural amount that the state is still trying to figure out exactly where we're going to put it. The good news is that once the designation is made, we can move that critical part of the network around. We can reallocate those miles wherever we want and wherever we put some priority. So if it's on there, it's good. If it's not on there, it can be made on there in future days.
Well, I think you understand the importance of extending to Pritchard with the intermodal service. Any other questions?
Here's the 52 and the urban, but they're talking about West Virginia.
Correct.
Carlisle Howell should be portion. I'm correct on that. That's the final stage one.
Designate a different part tomorrow. It's the same within the same allotted amount of time.
interstates for Pennsylvania, or just interstates?
All interstates.
Yeah. So was that designated by, quote, interstates or by the corridors, just the federal?
It was designated by the federal highway, all interstates from the put on freight over the national freight over. What Terry is talking about is that he takes a lot of the certain number of mileage that would be
above and beyond the interstate system.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is, as in the IC legislation, they designate 52 from Portsmouth South as being I-73. But that doesn't...
No, yeah.
I'd have to go, and I haven't looked at it over in our area to see if that's been put out there now, but I thought it was giving me the other name, whether it's 52 South or interstate or the national freight.
Would have to be interstate standards. So that corridor is designated, but not, I don't think, given that to would not make it on that original HWA.
Together, discussion. KYPC Central update. Thomas, you're up again, I think.
All right. So Central Office, we're wrapping up our project prioritization process for the new six-year highway plan, and I want to thank everybody that's been involved in that effort. I know it was a big change from the way we've done things in the past, so thanks for bearing with us throughout that process. Right now, we're taking all those projects that were evaluated and taking the local input into consideration and trying to develop our final six-year highway plan for the legislative approval based on that information. So that should be finished early next year and presented to the legislature, and then they'll have the opportunity to make provisions for and then approve the final version. So that's where we're at right now. I also wanted to mention that we did set targets for our safety performance measures, and those were distributed to all of the MPO staff. So that's something that the MPO can take into consideration as you're deciding what to do for your performance measures related.
Questions? Thank you, Tom. Federal update, Sandra English Smith.
Tom, do the segue, the transportation performance measures. That's what I had on my first. I actually have prepared a presentation, but I'm not going to go through it to save time, so we'll run kind of late. But suffice it to say that there are 25 performance measures, individual performance measures that apply to all the state MPOs and transit providers across the country. They don't necessarily apply equally everywhere, but everybody does kind of have to think about it from a different case there at different times. Like Thomas said, safety was the first one to go through PM1. So all the states have, at this point in time, hopefully come up with what their safety targets are going to be. Those are all still going through the approval process. They're tied into state highway safety plans that all those DOTs have to do. So kind of a little bit of a process. We don't really have a lot of approval over everything, but safety is kind of tied up into a different report. MPOs that have 180 days, the designation of every state when they meet their performance measure targets and measures. The ultimate goal is that collecting data, getting that data, and making data-driven decisions as to what investments are making in your infrastructure. There's safety, there's payment bridge, there is air quality, there is freight, there is reliability, and then in transit, there's asset management and a couple of other things. So that's a real big push for us right now. Safety's been done for a little bit as far as the process for moving into the other ones and pushing through those and seeing what's going to happen. Also, we just released our notice of funding opportunity for the Tiger Amber grant. We're actually all voting on a resolution a little bit later after the end of those. Tiger is applying for any connection for one of each of those. We talked earlier, we're working on the MOU. That MOU is tied up in the CPM. So there's a couple of different things that are happening there. There's the umbrella MOU that will be all three federal highways, three DOTs, three EPAs, two MPOs, and then there's individual MOUs that are part of that as well that, you know, kind of outline what. And then the final thing, I just sent out a notification yesterday, day four. Federal Highways is looking for recommendations for all the fuel corridors. Went through this process in 2016. route qualify, so for insurance, and there has to be facilities that fix around interviews along whatever corridor you're designated to that. There is signage that is associated with each one of those that's been done by MPCC, so that is something you should consider, you know, as you're going on, because alternative fuels kind of ramp it up a little bit more, it's becoming a little bit more popular, and we have it described in like FHWA alternative fuel corridors, so it's the right fuel website.
We appreciate you being here. Is there any questions? Our TAC chairman has been called away unexpectedly. He's not here today, Paul Davis. But I think our chairman, our director is going to take this over. 11A, revisions fiscal year 2018 to 2021 transportation improvement program and MPP amendment number 2. Do you want to address that?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you all for bearing with us. We are almost finished. We're in the home stretch. So every one of our meetings, we have some amendments to the TIF that we have to make, and this is no exception. So if in your next packet, you've got a staple thing. The first page looks like this. This is just listing the projects that are going to be added into our TIF. So we got a couple projects in Cabell County. The most important that I'll mention, or the main one that I'll mention, is a bridge replacement at the Huntington Mall. So on the bridge replacement I-64, and to widen that bridge, actually to add a couple lanes to that. On the next page, we've got a couple projects in Wayne County that we're adding, one of which is Pritchard Intermodal Freight Awareness Plan, Mr. Chairman, I'll let you know. And we have a couple of just transit projects. Anything that's highlighted in yellow is what's being changed on the transit there. But the other thing that I will just mention with your resolution, you heard from Parrott earlier with groupable projects. And again, that's something that we already do in Kentucky and Ohio, West Virginia, you know, statewide is now just moving forward with that. So from Kiowa's standpoint, we're already familiar with the process from working with Ohio and Kentucky. We had Perry speak about that specifically because it is a change to the way that we do things. And I didn't want to just, we didn't want to slip it in through a resolution. We wanted to have you all the opportunity here directly from Perry. So adding in groupable projects, that process is included in the resolution. But we wanted Perry to speak separately to that earlier in the agenda. So here the green resolution just covers all the amendments to the TIF, all the projects that are being added, and also includes some language about group of projects for West Virginia projects.
Resolution number 2018-0007. Do I have a motion to adopt the resolution? Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Not all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Is approved. Thank you very much. 11B, annual listing of fiscal year 2017 federally obligated projects for West Virginia and Ohio.
This is just a listing next in your packet. It says right here at the top, annual listing of federally obligated projects. I would just say this is only for West Virginia and Ohio at this time because Kentucky has a different deadline. Kentucky's projects aren't due until December. West Virginia and Ohio's projects are due now. This is just simply, this is a FHWA, so this is a federal requirement that we put this together. It's just a list of all the projects that have been obligated with federal funding in West Virginia and Ohio over the past fiscal year, so for FY17. That includes all of our transit projects as well, so for Lawrence County and then Cabell and Wayne County, DOH and transit projects. So this is a list of all the projects that have had federal funding obligated for last fiscal year. Against the FHWA requirement that we submit this to you.
And 11C, transit system status update for the Huntington, West Virginia, Kentucky, Ohio urbanized area.
I'll be very brief, and I'll give Randy just a minute if you want to talk about Ashland here in just 1 second. TTA, new things they've got going on. They got their Route Shout app, if you all have heard of that. The app they have, you're able to track the buses and where they are and look at the routes and schedule. That app is going to be getting a major update soon. So that's exciting for TTA. And they're also looking for qualified bus operators. So just to throw that out there. For Lawrence County Transit, they got a transition to a new shuttle service, which has been going for this fiscal year. It's going well so far. They're continuing to work with TTA and with Kiowa on that. Randy, did you want to say anything briefly about Ashland Bus System?
We don't have anything new going on right now. Just doing some surveys. We'll be back.
And then from West Virginia, from the state side of Division of Public Transit, they're working on a statewide asset management plan, which is a requirement of the FTA. And that deadline is September of 2018, so in about a year. Yes, sir.
11D, 5310 transit program for Huntington, West Virginia, Huntington, West Virginia, Kentucky, Ohio, urbanized area. Terry.
I'll try to be brief as well. As y'all know, we have a program that's just becoming a TMA for transit funding, which is a 5310 program. We actually under a fourth round of this, and TTA is our partner, and we do the administration together with them. So we do a lot of the application process and do the review. They actually do the ordering of the vehicle, make sure all the maintenance is set. So there are all the applications for round four are at TTA right now. We had CISO applied for a vehicle from Huntington. TTA is also applied for vehicles. And something new that we're going to try is a pilot program for mobility manager. And what this is going to be is they'll have a house of the individuals there at TTA, and they will provide assistance to all the transit providers within the area, within our region. And so it can help with our 5310 program. Right now, the program, there's so much going on that we just can't keep up with everything. So we thought that someone who might be a little bit more dedicated for that position to provide assistance would be a good help. So part of that money for the TTA person would be provided from the program. So with that, actually, this round four, we ended up putting two cycles together because as it came to TMA, we, as the new program takes a while to get things moving and program set up. So we're now, this one has two funding cycles. Round five, we'll have two funding cycles, money put together, and after that, we'll be caught up and we'll do it if we have one amount each year. Not sure when round five will be, but we'll probably see another 6 months or so. One other quick thing is that in earlier cycles, we had awarded funding for vehicle for Tri-State Industries and the Huntington Development Corporation. They actually, Tri-State Industries, because of some of the bylaws, they could not do the program any longer. So they actually had to relinquish the vehicle, and we actually gave them to Easterville, which I should say next, Warren County. The other Huntington Development Corporation, the same kind of situation with them, and we kept those in town. Or in Huntington, and we just took that one vehicle to CISO, and I understand that CISO is thrilled to have the vehicle that they provide for. So, like I said, that's just kind of a short, quick thing. If you want some more information on transit on the program, let me know.
Great, thank you very much. 11 East, Kyle, with sub allocated funds. Kyle?
So, our sub allocated funds, which are the funds that we're able to use to, you know, to pay for some of these grant applications that we've got going on here. Our next round, we're going to be opening up later this fall. So October the 16th, that round will be open. The intent to apply deadline will be November 17th. The full application will be due December the 15th. Again, this is an in-house application. So if you all have projects that you're interested in doing, you know, it requires a 20% local match, but 80% of that can come from Cuyahoga's sub-allocated funds. So make sure to get with myself or one of the staff, and we'll talk it through, and we want to try to fund these projects, and we're excited about it. So our next round will be opened up this fall. If for some reason you should have a major project that you want to do in the meantime, work with us, let us know. The advantage of us now being a TMA, we have some of this local and regional funding and control that we can work with you throughout the year. So please make sure to keep in your contact with all of our staff.
Resolution that you have in your packet from 2018-008, Iowa Interstate Planning Commission support of the United States Department of Transportation EMPRA transmission for US 52 Tulsa Highway upgrade. Is there a motion to adopt the resolution? Is there a second?
I have a comment on that. What are the issues that potentially can come up with that? Whatever Cuyahoga would apply for the federal grant amount will be substantially less than the actual project costs, especially if the federal obligation bonds do not pass, whether or not the Division of Highways is in the position of adding that to our program, because it would be a major, major shift in our program to make up any excess funds that were not supplied by the infra grant, could put us in a position where we would not support that. In other words, typically a project like that, $20 million, if we got $20 million, we'd be very lucky. That's not currently in our program, so we would have to come up with state and federal funding of $130 million that we've already got scheduled for other projects, which means we'd have to completely shift our program around to put that above projects that we've already prioritized as higher. If general obligation bonds pass, it's a moot point. You're exactly right. Then you've actually helped us, because it's extra money that we don't have to use the general obligation bond. I just want to make sure that this one and the Cologne, they're not currently in our program. So we were still discussing our management exactly what to do with some of these projects that aren't necessarily in our six-year program that folks will be looking to add. So I just want to make sure that caveat is out there.
And this is the same support we gave last year.
Well, we didn't actually pass a resolution last year. That was why we wanted this year to try to make our applications a little bit stronger. Same thing with the Chesapeake bypass. We're just trying to find some ways.
We'll encourage Coyote to move forward with the process. Just know that things could drastically change if the bond doesn't pass. And then we'll need to discuss and figure out exactly what we can do. Okay?
Yes.
I just want to make sure that
Thank you, sir. We're moving to second. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor of the resolution, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Resolution is adopted. Thank you. Close the interchange, construct new interchange on I-64 between Belton and Hurricane X. Resolution is. Now, this doesn't really match the color. Unless I've stayed up here long enough, I'm blind.
We can blame Bill Gates and Microsoft for that.
Okay.
The number of colors to highlight is limited.
It's this one. 2018-009, Cuyahoga Interstate Planning Commission supported the United States Department of Transportation Tiger Grant submission for Cuyahoga Interchange and Safety Improvements. Is there a motion to adopt the resolution?
Same caveat applies.
Yes. But the understanding of it.
Thank
you. Yes.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been properly moved to second. Any further discussion on the motion? Not all in favor of the resolution, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Number 13, anything under old business or unfinished business? In the new business, we note the future dates and put that in your calendar. Anybody got anything else to bring before this group before we adjourn? All I want to say is I appreciate you staying, but think about this. If we just met, ate, and left, there would be nothing going on. We've got lots of things going on in our tri-state region, and we can be thankful for that. That and $1.06 to get you a cup of coffee. We're adjourned. Thank you very much. Or a high at the dollar, okay?